Welcome to the Building Better Futures for Health series. I'm your host, Richard Sokolov. I'm the co-founder and executive director of IDE Group. In this series, we'll be speaking to former contestants, winners, and judges of the Building Better Futures for Health competition. Today in this episode, I have Anne O'Neill join us. Anne is from the New South Wales Office of Health and Medical Research, and she has over 25 years of experience in health, medical research, and policy sectors. Anne is responsible for leading the development and implementation of major policies and programs to enhance medical research capacity in New South Wales and raise the profile of New South Wales research and development nationally and internationally. Prior to this, Anne was a research and development manager at the Children's Hospital at Westmead for over 10 years. Welcome, Anne.
Thank you, Richard.
And you're one of our lovely judges that has been doing BBFH for many years for us now. So it's great to welcome you to this series to have a chat with us about BBFH this year and what's happened in the past. I just want to start by basically talking about, it's been a tough couple of years, especially being part of New South Wales Health. Tell us a little bit about your role, and obviously also within the last couple of years, how has the situation that we've all been living through affected your role?
It's a really good question. I'd like to say, though, that for myself and the majority of people in New South Wales Health, it's been one of those times that we've been able to really stand up and be counted. And I think that even though it's been tough for us, it's been tougher for the people of New South Wales and obviously the rest of Australia. But what we've been able to do is contribute to getting us through it. And I think that that's been really important. Mm. My role is enterprise and international partnerships within the Office for Health and Medical Research. And that effectively means I look after things like commercialization, industry engagement. My team are the doorway in to New South Wales Health for locally and the rest of the world. And we connect people to the system, both internationally and also New South Wales and nationwide. In terms of where my role and how it was affected, I think that it really put to the fore the importance of engagement and navigation within health, because for a lot of people, it's a big black box and it can be really confusing. Mm-hmm. And the way it's structured is actually quite elegant when you think about it, in terms of a small central core and then everything else is distributed out to the districts. But if you don't know that, it can look very confusing.
Yeah.
So how my role changed was really to make sure that we were a clear doorway in. So when the pandemic hit, what happened was that we became a triage service for all of the hundreds of inquiries that came in regarding, we have PPE, we have this technology, we have this diagnostic, we want to run this clinical trial. If you just give us this much money, we'd be able to do X, Y, Z. So the frontline services, of which I was not part of them, so the direct COVID response teams were huge. They were the public health response and they also ran the communications. And I think we all saw that through the pandemic, where the chief health officers all around Australia, who you probably never knew before, became very, very famous.
Yeah.
And yes, there was some, you know, hiccups along the way, but as a country and as a state, I think we've done incredibly well compared to equivalent countries and states. So what we did was take the pressure off those COVID teams to deal with industry, to deal with universities, to deal with medical research institutes, to deal with individuals that felt that they could help the response but weren't directly related to it. That was an important role. The other role that we played was to be an intelligence service for the rest of government. We have intimate knowledge of the companies that we've funded, and we will talk about the Medical Devices Fund.
Yep, absolutely.
But those companies that we've supported and nurtured along the way, we got early intelligence about what the impact was going to be, because they were on the lookout in a way that government, I think, was a little slow to appreciate. And so what we were able to do without prejudice was to go out to our companies and say, what's happening? What's going on with you? What are you planning to do? How hard are you going to be impacted? And what should we be telling the rest of government about you? And we did that and was able to inform some of the responses for particularly industry throughout the worst of the pandemic and into the recovery period.
Because it's really unique about your role, and why we love that you're part of BBFH is that you give this unique, I think you described as this black box, this portal into this black box being public health. And not many people really sort of understand that. They think, you know, they've got a great idea, I'm going to go and all the hospitals will love it.
Yeah.
And I can imagine during COVID, you know, people were pouring in with these sorts of things because they saw the urgency of the situation that was unfolding. What do people not realise when they sort of, and companies not realise when they have to deal with this, let's call it public health, which is this sort of name for all sorts of things. But what do they sort of miss when they sort of try to make a positive impact on public health? What did I miss?
I think everyone is well-meaning coming in. Yep. It's not about making a buck. It's about making a difference. And particularly through the pandemic, we saw that. So lots of well-meaning people. But if you don't understand how the system works in terms of taking on innovation or what stage you need to be at in terms of even consideration for procurement, even fast-track procurement, then you're going to get stuck. Or you're going to go into the wrong doorway and then start bouncing around the system, and it's really difficult. I think the other thing too, that people believe that if they approach health with a great idea, that we've never seen a good idea. ever. And that we're going to be really excited about their idea. And that's really, that's unfortunate, but that's what happens. And it wasn't just us that were being, as in the ministry and the Office for Health and Medical Research, getting bombarded. It was also every minister that you could possibly think of. So we were fielding, and that's how government works. You can go to your local member, you know, you can go to your, you know, the relevant portfolio minister, and you can ask for a meeting.
Yeah.
And generally they will grant that meeting or expect some kind of response. And so that just adds, I think, what people didn't fully appreciate it, to the burden on the system. So we were managing all of those inquiries, managing all of the inputs that we were getting from ministerial officers, which is our role, but it was to the nth degree that you could possibly think of. I think the other thing too that people don't understand is that health responded really rapidly to the pandemic. There was clearly a burning platform and they were very flexible and adaptable.
Yep.
But it's a really, really big machine.
Yeah. Yeah.
And a lot of things do take time. And there's a reason for that. And it's because it's about patient risk.
Yeah.
At the heart of everything we do, it's not about whether it's a great idea or not, is that is it going to be a risk if we don't do our due diligence around it? So I think there's some of those nuances that are really important to understand. I think the other thing too is people don't understand the difference between the federal state of play and the state of play when it comes to health. And we have different responsibilities, as we should. So I think understanding that, but also understanding that you may not know it and that you have to ask some questions and it may not make sense. But I think that's that would be the take-home message for people. Is that it's not because we're don't care about your idea, care about your innovation. It's just that there is a time and a place, and then sometimes the system gets saturated because you're number 100 instead of number one inquiry.
And the priorities change. Obviously, when COVID came in, things probably went completely about face. And I guess people don't understand that coming into a system like that, there has to be compelling reasons.
Yes.
You talk about the risk, but there also be compelling reasons to go away from the status quo and understand what the – I think a lot of people speak about value propositions to certain individuals, but I don't think about value propositions downstream. When people talk about medical devices with me, I sometimes I say it's not the complexity of the actual technology. Sometimes it's amazing stuff, incredible stuff, like blows me away. But it's just the sheer nature of the stakeholders involved that brings its own complexity that is sometimes in some way greater than the technical clinical complexity that they face. And I think trying to penetrate such a large organization, and obviously there are larger sort of organizations around the world, but New South Wales Health is a big one.
It's a big one.
It's a big one.
Yes.
Sometimes catches people a little bit off or they're not thinking about sort of the, not just the user, but the person procuring and the person who's managing the procurement and the person who's looking at
the policymaker, models of care, you know, the subspecialty networks, all of this, which once you come into the system and we can help you navigate it and connect you with it, it becomes such an asset. But if you're trying to just come in cold, I think it is quite a challenge.
How have things changed with the Office for Health and Medical Research through your time being there? We talked about the pandemic, but obviously when you started, things were a bit different. We'll talk a little bit more about some of the great initiatives you've personally been involved in. But how has it sort of changed so far since when you began to where we are today?
It's, again, a really good question because I was reflecting that the office has been in place now for nearly 10 years.
Okay.
And I've been part of the office for all of that time. So a little bit of the history is that medical research started off in a completely different portfolio. And then when the coalition came in, they decided that medical research should sit with health. And I must say there were detractors from that as well as proponents for that, but it has been of real benefit to all of the medical research initiatives and the commercialization initiatives because of where it's been embedded. It's context. context about what health needs and what the health priorities are. And I know in commercialization people say, but you should have a world view. Yes, but don't forget your home view as well, where you want to start and where you initially want to get funding or support.
Well, access is a lot easier locally, I would imagine. Well, that's where you'd want to start,
exactly.
Right? Yeah.
And New South Wales is a great place to start in terms of clinical trials and, you know, access to key opinion leaders. I think people don't quite understand just how incredibly rich our R&D ecosystem is here.
Yeah, I'll second that. Yeah.
And we defer to other jurisdictions, both locally, nationally and internationally. Yeah. And we don't fully appreciate the wealth of key opinion leaders, services, the health system itself, the support programs that we have right here in our own backyard that people could leverage more. We need to do, we as in government, I think, needs to do a much better job of profiling the wonderful things that New South Wales has so that people go, oh, yes, well, I don't have to go here. There, it's all here.
Absolutely.
And I think that's what we connect to. So when we started 10 years ago, I must say there was like 2.5 people in the office. I was one of them.
Is that all?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
We've now grown to over 30. We started with a budget of less than $20 million per annum. We now manage over 100 and something million dollars in funds per annum. And that's because I think we've just gone from strength to strength about embedding those initiatives within a highly integrated health system, understanding that we are not the solution to all problems, but that we shouldn't be an obstacle to solutions either.
Yeah, you're this beautiful sort of connecting vehicle, right? And we just I just spoke with one of our previous guests about it's really a people business. I mean, as much as it's a technical and a clinical business and talking about biology and all types of treatments, we're also talking about connecting people. And I think that's where you all come in very, very strongly. I just want to go down and talk a little bit about you. And we talked about research, and you've been in research or the translation of it now for quite some time.
My whole career.
Whole career. Why are you so passionate? Because every time I've had a drink with you or had a chat, you're so passionate about it. You really stand up for it, especially about our state and Australia as well. When I spoke to you about your overseas roles and in sort of promoting New South Wales as a destination internationally. What makes you passionate about this?
I've loved science since I was a wee girl and always fascinated about how things worked, how things didn't work, when things went wrong, why did they go so horribly wrong? And so from early days, even primary school days, that was, you know, I was the one that was the sort of the home vet for any pets that got sick. Sometimes good, sometimes not, not so good. Not good with fish. But for me, it's about the fact that medical research and medicine, it's the human face of science. And I think it's really relatable. And everybody can relate to that. And everyone can get, I think, excited about it when it goes right and when we have wins. And then when we don't have wins, why aren't we having wins? And I think for me, when I was out in the sector, it was really about really working hard with all the clinicians and the surgeons and the healthcare workers in that medical research space to get their grants, to get their ethics, to run their clinical trials. It was very operational. But I was seeing policies come into my space that I thought, this isn't going to work.
Sense.
It doesn't make sense. Yeah. And I always vowed that if I ever got a policy job, like a proper government job in this space, which I was always going to be in this space, that I would make a difference, that I would add value, that this is very lofty ambitions of a 20-something-year-old. But for me, it was about making sure that I would not put anything in place or be part of putting anything in place that was an obstacle to medical research getting to where it needed to go.
Yeah.
The other thing I learned too is that you see all of this funding coming in. People complain about funding, but there's so much funding.
There is funding,
okay? So whether it be private or public or, you know, either taxpayer money, like donated funds, there is so much money that goes into medical research because people believe in it. It's really easy to raise money for medical research in lots of forms. But then we're really bad, and this is not just New South Wales, but the Australia is really bad at converting that into things that we can use.
Yeah.
We rank like terribly with some countries that you would never expect. And you just go, well, how are they converting when they're doing things on a shoestring? And so for me, it was about what are we missing in terms of disclosing our IP too early? We're not building companies or we don't have an ecosystem where people can thrive and actually, you know, not fear to fail if something's not working. So my passion is about making sure that the public gets what it deserves in terms of its input and what it should expect from government funding.
I think that's the end game, I guess, from your perspective. And I think it's interesting because you are in a line of people who all work in this space have this passion for making a difference and doing something meaningful. I mean, I know that's sort of where I found myself coming to MedTech, and it still drives me. And I think this whole ability to lubricate the system and actually help people translate, because I've spoken about this a lot of times as well, probably just repeating myself, but we have a great ability to do research here, and we're very pragmatic in how we apply it, but we just need to get better at that a little bit and get some more. And that's what the whole BBFH is for anyway, or we're trying to share and trying to help people along the way. So I think we all share that sort of passion, which is, I guess, why we like working together with each other. So I guess just talking about some of the biggest programs that you've been involved with and that I think most people may know about, one being the Medical Devices Fund, New South Wales Health Medical Devices Fund, and also the Medical Device Commercialization Training Program. Took me a long time to work out that acronym and get that right. Always got the letters
and then
the wrong
we
way
changed
around.
It.
Yeah, yeah, and then you changed it. There you go. What was the vision when you started those two programs? Because I remember when I first met you, that's where I sort of met you in those sorts of context. Can you talk us a little bit about that? And
I think those would have to be two career highlights, to be fair.
So
Medical Devices Fund, it was actually an election commitment, which we've never seen medical research as a platform for any party ever. It was usually buried within health somewhere. But to actually make it an election commitment, and it was really too to say, look, we have a very strong med tech industry in New South Wales. Why don't we just, you know, bolster that and build on it? And so that's where the Medical Devices Fund came from, that initial inspiration of build on something that we're good at and accelerate inventions, if you like. And even more simply than that, the minister, for the very first Minister for Health and Medical Research, both at a state level and nationally, was Gillian Skinner, who you would remember.
Remember her, yes.
She said to me, because I was one of the 2.5 people in the office, we just need the next Cochlear or ResMed. Go and make that happen.
Yeah.
And that, to me, was just, it was exciting. It's what I came into government to do.
Yeah.
But I was terrified at the same time because I didn't have a clue. I'd done a few sort of wonderful training programs through my time at the kids' hospital, which was just gave me that grounding and the language. But I wouldn't know how to commercialize something. And so I went out to the market, not just to other policy people, but I went out to the market and said, if I had a fund, no matter how small, what would you not do with it?
That's a unique way to ask. It's really good, yeah.
And people were really generous with their time because the time was right to do something different.
Yeah.
And so the vision really was to make sure that we got not only technologies that were really interesting and that they met all the, you know, they had to be novel and all of that kind of thing. But they had to be, that they would be of use to the New South Wales health system.
Okay. So given a target. Yeah.
Absolutely. Otherwise you'd get all sorts. And that's what I think a lot of the other funds get. They get such an array of different applications, but ours is really targeted to, you know, what would be useful in New South Wales health, which meant that you need to have an understanding of what New South Wales health wanted, which meant that was the start of the conversation. With a lot of people. I think the main thing with it was that, and then we're going into our 10th year next year for the fund, which is just amazing.
Not many people thought it would go that long.
No, but it has. And it's been extraordinary. I mean, for a fund that's run by government, it's, you know, we've delivered about $55 million out to the sector, 35 or so technologies. They've raised over $800 million in capital.
Wow.
And they've, you know, tens of thousands of patients have been treated, as have devices sold.
Wow.
And you think, this is a program that the return on investment has been extraordinary. And I think some of the things for me, the learnings from it, have been that we'd made sure that it wasn't just about the innovation and the potential for a large exit. It was about, will they build a business here? Was that ever going to be an option? Will the IP stay here because it had to be generated here? And will we ensure that we build the ecosystem? And that we connected back to the clinical world. And that, to me, was, I think, why it's been one of the great things about it.
Are there any sort of standout companies, or maybe you shouldn't nominate anyone, but sort of
I think I can. I don't think they'd mind me. There's been a couple of really amazing, well, one exit, which was the Elastigen being acquired by Allergan.
Yep.
And that was really wonderful because that was IP that came out of University of Sydney, had a really good, you know, the science was sound. That's the other thing too. The inputs to what we've got here are are beautiful. Mm. They're wonderful. They're scientifically rigorous. Mm. It's that next step.
Next step, yeah.
So Professor Tony Weiss, it was his IP. But then what happened was that there was a couple of major investments, including from New South Wales Medical Devices Fund.
Mm.
At critical times in their journey, in order for them to accelerate their development in order to be more attractive to other investors.
Mm.
And so that was a really good example. And now the CEO of that company is back in circulation doing incredible things. And that, again, is about that.
That's the thing, right? It's that sustainability of this ecosystem that
absolutely.
We're looking to get. Yeah.
So, yes, we were disappointed that they didn't build the thing here, but that was an exit that actually benefited the state.
Yeah, it made sense for them, right?
Then absolutely.
You could bring that back into the system and lubricate the system again.
Absolutely. And another one would be Clean Space, which was a wonderful, this is the personal respiratory device and protective equipment. And they listed at the end of last year. So this is like going through the pandemic. I'm going to get these figures wrong, but there was something like 150 million market valuation when at opening of trade, and then they closed over 500.
Wow.
And you kind of go, that's pretty incredible.
Yeah.
And they're a company that is going to stay here and, well, sorry, I'm going to preempt them. You're going to stay here. No,
but
their plan is to stay here and build here. And we've got other examples, like Speedex is a wonderful example
well.
IP that came out of Johnson & Johnson to the founders, and they've just gone from strength to strength. And they also pivoted during COVID in order to have testing that was relevant to the pandemic. And I think that having invested, we call it an investment, it's really grants that we give them, in those companies has shown us that we can pick some winners.
Mm-hmm.
We've had probably less than a handful of those that haven't gone through, haven't made it, but that's okay as well.
It's expected, right?
It's expected.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, from 35 that we're invested in, that's not a bad track record.
Yeah.
So in terms of the commercialization training program, that actually came out of the Medical Devices Fund.
That's right. That's right. Because you're preparing the sort of the people to actually take that journey
exactly.
in those groups.
Yeah.
To me, that's some wonderful statistics. And just looking back, you know, I remember when we first met and I didn't think how long this would last, but it's been an amazing achievement. And you've been with us on BBFH for 6 years. So in our little corner of the ocean, where do you think BBFH fits in the landscape of all these other efforts? So, you know, you talk about the big program. So we've got this little program which we're trying to help basically go in the same direction. Where do you think it fits and what do you like about being part of BBFH?
Can I say that when you launched it, it was inspired that it was part of Vivid.
Yes.
Yeah, because I think most people think of Vivid as, music, colour, light, some artsy stuff, but not like this sort of really heavy, we're talking science, med tech, commercialisation.
That's right,
and I just remember the first crowd was, I was blown away.
It was quite big, wasn't it?
It was huge. I don't think you expected it either.
Yeah.
But what I liked about it, it gave a platform for people to present their ideas to a completely different audience. And you don't know that those people that have come for the art and music are not sitting there and could be a major investor or someone that might want to be, a CEO of the company. And so that broader audience reach than the ones that we normally get in front of, I think that that's incredible. I think also, too, the fact that they get to receive some pretty hard feedback on their journey.
So I was going to say, you like to provide some stern feedback.
Oh, so do you. Don't even.
Yeah.
That really tough feedback that they have to hear if they're going to make it through to actually get up in front of an audience.
Yeah.
And then it's not just the money, like the funds that they're awarded if they're successful. I mean, it's a wonderful, wonderful injection. But for me, it's more about the fact that I get embedded in a group that knows what it's doing, that's done it before, that you're entrepreneurial, that you're surrounded by the right technical people as well as people that are really passionate in this space. And sort of you nurture them along that journey that I don't think they'd get that anywhere else.
Yeah, and I think, again, it comes back to this connection, you know, sharing a common vision and help guiding each other, you know, through this maze of uncertainty when it comes to trying to start something up and get it to market. So people are listening to this who are hopefully thinking about entering. What would you say to them? What advice would you give to them in terms of not just for BBFH, but also on their journey to try to commercialize that med tech or health tech? What advice would you give them?
I think
you've seen a lot of them.
I've seen a lot of them. Some really lovely experiences, some not so lovely.
Yeah.
Because that's the space we're in, right?
Yep, correct.
I think there's three things. The first thing I would say is to be open.
Yeah.
to be open and vulnerable that your baby might be ugly, right? And that you need to sort of like take that on as part of the journey.
Yeah.
And that's okay. It's not personal. It's about making, setting you up for success. I think the second thing is to be humble.
Yep.
To receive feedback, to take it on the chin if you don't agree with it necessarily.
Yep.
And you don't necessarily have to take on that feedback if you believe, really, really believe it should be going another direction. But certainly be humble enough to appreciate that there are other points of view out there and that you don't know everything.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
I would also, as a caveat to that point, always do your due diligence around that guidance that you're receiving.
Yeah.
Because not everybody is the right fit or the right person
or
for
understand
you,
where you are,
or
right?
Understand where you are.
Exactly.
And I think the very last thing, and I think we've all realized this through the last couple of years, is be persistent.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just really be tenacious, be persistent. If this is the baby you want to go with, then, or if it's the journey that you want to go in, and you may have to pivot and you may have to take up a different pathway, then just stick to it. Because, I mean, overnight successes are very rarely overnight.
Correct. And it's interesting your comment about the pivot, because people think that what they bring to BBFH is going to be what they ultimately commercialize. Some do, but a lot of the time it's a slight deviation or a great deviation from what they have. And there's good reasons for that. If you get the right input, the right feedback, the right push, you'll find a home for it where it actually is compelling and makes a difference to like New South Wales Health and other sort of ecosystems like that, be it private or public. We're probably going to wrap up because I'm really enjoying this. Before we wrap up, just tell me a little bit about what your hopes are for the next coming year. I mean, we've been through this. Mm. We're still going through, I guess, this pandemic, but we're sort of on a different time with it now. Looking forward for health and medical research, what are you hopeful for in the next year or two for it here in New South Wales?
Well, I hope to see the companies that we've funded to continue to grow from strength to strength. Mm-hmm. And I think that there's a real understanding now by government, by New South Wales government, I will talk to, is on that R&D can accelerate and uplift the economy.
Yeah.
So those high-value jobs, that knowledge economy, the multiplier effect, the services that they use, the services that they provide is just paramount. Mm. I'm also hoping that health will always be and continue to be a critical partner in those journeys, that we don't just have a set-and-forget fund, that we work with companies all along the way, that we still have a commercialization training program that is relevant, working with Cicada to make sure that we're not just delivering med tech expertise, but also in software as a medical device, diagnostics and therapeutics, because the market said that we needed to do that.
Yep.
And so for the next 4 years, it's going to be really exciting in that domain. And I think as a closing remark, the pandemic has been really hard on women for a variety of reasons. And I know I won't go into all of them, but I think some of them are really obvious in terms of the responsibilities and the career breaks that women generally have to take in STEM and in the life sciences industry. But what I'm really, really hoping for is that with everything that we've provided, that everything that we're doing, and with this ecosystem that we're building, that women will be able to come back in a force and we'll start to see more and more female founders.
Yeah, absolutely. On that, Anne, thank you so much for your time today. It's been wonderful. I really look forward to seeing you more this year and in future BBFHs, if we're lucky enough to have you. And thank you for your time.
Yeah, thanks, Richard. Happy to be here.